Hey, y'all, this week I am so excited to bring you an episode from the Her Archives in the Before Times. I'm talking with photographer and creative director at Tropico Photo, Michelle Norris. Michelle and I discuss navigating the tensions between creative work and business. Michelle shares why creating an aesthetic is important for anyone building a brand and why it's important to know and understand the worth of your work. Check it out. Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Her with Amina Brown. And I'm Amina Brown. And let me tell y'all something. My guest today, she's awesome for a couple of reasons, but mainly because this is our second time recording this. And if you've been listening to my podcast, this has only happened once before. And she has been gracious enough to re-record. So shout out to that. I want to welcome photographer, creative director of Tropico Photo. Hey. I am welcoming Michelle Norris to the podcast.
Hi, Amina. I'm happy to be here again.
Michelle, this actually worked out like super great because we're getting to be in person and
we wanted to be face to face last time.
Yes. And like our schedules were like,
yeah.
So this worked out super great. Y'all, we're going to be talking about all the photography things. And I want you to know, first of all, you should just check out Tropico's work because there's a lot of amazing work. And when I first met Michelle through Christy Gomez, super shout out to Christy Gomez.
Thanks, Christy.
Because I was looking for a photographer to work with me on like how all the photos were going to be for the release of my book, How to Fix a Broken Record, my author photo on the back. Michelle, you're the first professional photographer I ever worked with for a book photo.
Wow.
Because my first book, Matt and I just went to downtown Decatur and hoped for the best.
I mean, that's how most photography kind of starts out. You know, cover the basics, and then over time you want to get a little fancier with it. You know?
Yeah, with someone who is a professional and knows the things. And so I reached out to Christy and I was like, I'm looking for a woman of color to take some photos and like make them look dope. And she was like, it's Michelle Norris that you need. Oh. And then I went to look at your work and I was like, it is Michelle Norris that I need. So the photo on the back of How to Fix a Broken Record is the work of Michelle Norris. And the photo on the back of How to Fix a Broken Record was also styled by Michelle Norris. Cause I literally was like, please take pictures of me. And also I don't be knowing how to dress.
But now, you know,
I do know. We're going to talk about that a little bit too, Michelle, because I wish y'all could see this outfit that Michelle is wearing. It's a casual weekend when we're recording this. And like, it's very like fun and chic what she's doing today. And I just want y'all to know that I get my educations.
Thank you.
So we're going to talk about that because I think one of the things I've loved about working with you and one of the things I love just about your work, even that isn't pictures of me, is I love just the way you incorporate light and color and style. And there's such an artfulness to that. And I really want to know more about that. So I want us to talk about that. But I like to start with an origin story first. Do you remember your first camera?
My first camera actually was like mini cameras because I was shooting with disposable cameras all the time. I guess it was in middle school when I started to get them and I kind of just took photos of everything. It was like a kind of a collector's sort of a thing I was doing where I was shooting with my disposable camera, pictures of my friends, pictures at school, around the house. And then I would get them all printed and then I would put them all up over my walls. So I wasn't like showing them to anyone and didn't really have any end goal, but I definitely liked documenting my life in general. And then in high school, I got a DSLR eventually, but it was kind of more of the same, just like shooting around. I definitely didn't have a direction then.
Okay. And I want to also ask, while we're asking origin questions, were you always interested in fashion and style also?
Yeah, I definitely was. I think there was a lot going on when I was younger. So there's definite like long-term honing that has happened because I find that coming along with an interest in style is also a lot of fumbles because if you dress really casually and maybe take less risk, it's really hard to go wrong. And I think that when I was younger, I was like doing everything. Like there were times when my parents would literally tell me I couldn't leave the house in what I was wearing because it was too many patterns. Like not because it was like revealing or anything. They were like, that looks crazy.
You can't put polka dots in stripes.
And this specific, I think it was like a tie dye and plaid sort of a thing going on. And I was like, Mary Kate and Ashley were like my style icons mm-hmm. when I was younger. And my mom wouldn't like take me to get their line that had come out at some like limited two, like something like that, right? Like the fancy.
Limited two in this conversation today. Yes.
And so instead, but she let me get their like Walmart line, but I literally was wearing a tank top at different points that just said the words Mary Kate and Ashley. Like it wasn't like they had really designed it as much as it just said their names. So there was interest there, but it was definitely kind of all over the place for a long time. But I've always really liked fashion and aesthetics, and that definitely factors into what I do now in a big way.
Well, and I think that's interesting because not every professional photographer is good at style,
right?
You know? I think it's really cool that you have both of those things. I mean, we know some people who are going to be really great at style, really great at aesthetics, and wouldn't be great at photography and vice versa. So I think it's really dope that you get a chance to bring those two things together in your work, right?
And it's really exciting because it just brings a whole nother element to what we do as the team, my husband, Forrest, Agar, and I as Tropico Photo. It really lets us pull together the aesthetic of all of our projects in a way that feels complete and like it's our voice from beginning to end. So because I have influence over like art direction and style and my own sense of personal style, it helps us to brand really strongly and have control over those portions that sometimes a lot of commercial photographers will have like a signature about their look, but you'll look at their portfolio and it's like kind of all over the place, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But for us, we bring a very specific style to everything that we do, which is helpful in a lot of ways because people know what they're coming to us for.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of having an aesthetic as a creative? Because there's fears sometimes among us as creatives and whatever work we do that we should be more generalists. And not that it's bad to be generalist, right? But I think we have these fears that what if, you know, said client or said opportunity comes and they're like, oh, you know, we only wanted these to be turquoise. Then you're like, okay, well, cool. I can do turquoise. And they're like, oh, we want these to be metallic. And you're like, oh, cool. I can do, you know, so I think we end up kind of in that mode without taking a bit of a creative step back to say, what's my aesthetic or the aesthetic of my company? So can you talk about why is that important? Or do you think it's important for creatives to have some of those ideas in mind versus feeling like they have to be generalists?
Yeah, I think it's a big thing, especially in photography. Early on, a lot of people say, you know, like, make sure you can do everything so that you could get like any type of job. And I think that that can serve you to a point. But at this moment in time that we're at, especially with things like Instagram being so pervasive, branding yourself is so important. And you're not going to be able to build a solid following. You're not going to be able to get all the jobs that you want if you don't have something special that you deliver in every project, meaning that specializing in creating your own brand can help you stand out in a lot of ways. The fact is there are like some jobs you might miss out on because people think you're too specialized. If you were more generalized, there are jobs you're going to miss out on because people think you don't have a specialty. So you have to kind of let go of that fear and instead ask yourself, like, how do I be the best at the area I'm pursuing? Like, and Tropico Photo is generalized in some ways. Like, we don't specifically shoot one type of thing. I mean, we do still life, we do portraits, we do like travel stuff, like a lot of different things, but we bring the same style to all of them. There is a point when you have to be okay with having some flexibility because, I mean, there will be big clients that come to us with jobs that we see why they're asking us to do it. There might be parts that are out of our element or something that we wouldn't necessarily choose if it was our own project, but you have to be willing to take those sorts of compromises without giving up too much because we want all of our work to look like it was ours, you know?
Talk to me about, I guess a part of me wants to say the tensions between being creative and being in business. But then in other ways, I want to hear what are the pluses of that too. I mean, I think there are tensions there, but I think when I look at Tropico Photo as a business, it seems like that's a balance that your business strikes really well. Like you and Forrest are doing creative work. I mean, I've seen some of the things y'all have been doing for like magazine covers and stuff. And I'm like, oh, I would have never thought about doing that. But that also means there's this back end infrastructure of how the business part gets run, how the client intake process is, how you're pitching to clients, how you price, whatever it is that you're doing. So talk about some of the lessons that you've learned in your career and that the two of you have learned in this business that you're doing together.
Yeah, we feel really lucky to be in the area that we're in because creative advertising is really thriving right now. Our style is very like colorful and poppy and has a very specific sense of lighting. And those are all things that are really popular in advertising right now, which is great. You know, it's definitely leaning towards the art side, especially for advertising to younger people. That makes it really easy for us to feel fulfilled by the work we're doing, but then also being able to get paid for our work and, you know, kind of become part of these bigger campaigns. The biggest plus is really that you get paid.
We love to get paid.
Getting paid is the best part. But it's also great to be doing something that you love. And a lot of times we're given so much freedom with how we do that. And that's a really great thing. And then even the times when the job is more structured by the client, you still find ways to bring something special to it with each job. You know, like we'll pitch different ideas that we think would be fun. And it starts to become an art form of its own. Like when we're driving down the highway and I'm looking at different billboards, you know, like I really enjoy it because I feel like I'm looking at art. Like I'm thinking about different choices that people made and the advertisements about the lighting, the colors, like the way they posed people, just stuff that becomes really interesting to us because it is an art form. As far as the actual business side, that is a whole learning curve of its own. I mean, I think that has been the hardest part of running our own business is like figuring out pricing over time, figuring out how to talk to new clients, the words that we want to be using, the way that we want to, like, do you just tell people how much things cost up front? Do you, like, there's so many things you just have to work out over time. And we finally now have it nailed down pretty well where depending on like the size of the company reaching out, depending on if it's an agency or if it's the owner of a business, we approach it different ways. So now it becomes like the more experience that you have with it, the more able you are to look at someone and say, well, we're going to need all the details from their project to be able to give them an estimate. Or to look, if they're a really small business, we can give them a general day rate and then say plus props or something like that. And then, I mean, and then there's these huge jobs where you have to get a producer and they bid it for you. There's so many different hoops to jump through and jobs like that that are 100% different than if a local client reaches out to us. So all of that takes time to figure out. But thankfully, Atlanta has been a pretty helpful community. And the creatives here, I feel like, view each other less as competition and are more like seeing all of us as the underdog and able to give advice and be helpful. And even we've had people openly, you know, share their rates with us. And I think that kind of community is amazing to have, and ideally how you want to approach talking to other creatives instead of viewing everybody as your competition.
Yeah, having more of a communal experience. I mean, even, you know, when I worked with you on a named project that unfortunately was never released, but there was, you know, a bigger company here in Atlanta that was partnering with another organization and they were interested in me doing this video project. And so I had reached out to you because there were very specific style requirements. It was the first, you know, video project I'd ever done where they were like, here's our mood board. And I nodded in the meeting like I knew what a mood board was.
Right. You're like, mm-hmm. Yes, like, exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. Mood board.
I have mood boards all over my house. I love a mood board.
Exactly.
You know?
Show it to me.
I get out of the meeting and I'm like, do, 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 do. I'm
what's
like,
a mood board?
Michelle, please come and help because they want some clothes to match a mood board. But for you, because this is, even though it was, you know, you were helping me, and you're just like, as a side job, sometimes I help people look good.
Right.
But you were like, this is not my main job, but come on, girl, I'm going to take you to the store and try to help you like look nice, you know. But because this is, you know, the market I was in is such a major part of what your business does. Like when I said the words to you,
right,
you were like, oh, I understand this language. Let me see. Let me look at it. And you were like, oh, I get it. And I think sometimes as creatives, when your business is growing, sometimes you do get to that point where you're like, uh-oh, like I'm in a room where some people are saying some things and I don't know what they're talking about.
And you start to learn that the language that they're using in advertising and the more corporate the company is, the language feels abstract to other people who aren't in that world. So I feel like it takes a lot of practice to be able to take that information, that mood board, those like buzzwords that they're using, and learn how to synthesize those into what it actually means in like real application. Because, you know, we'll have people come and say, we want it to be a citrus forward palette that really pops, but doesn't feel too young or kitschy. Like things like that.
I'm lost.
And you're like, I used to feel like, what are you talking about? And now I'm like, I think the best way is that you take it and you just run with it. And you're like, okay, this is what that means to me, and throw things out there. And I feel like you have to be unafraid to say, okay, let me make sure that I'm getting you here. So I'm thinking we're talking about like bold colors, but they're rich and not too bright. Mm-hmm. And that we're talking about more sophisticated than what might be for a 20-year-old or something. You know, it's so confusing, but I think over time it's really helpful to just kind of practice bouncing ideas off with other people to make sure that you get it. Because there used to be times when we would have a whole conversation on the phone, get off the phone, and I would be like, what are we talking about? And I don't know how to start now. I can't put together like a deck, which is like basically a creative pitch. Like I was like, I left that conversation having no idea what's going on. And now I feel a lot more enabled to like charge forward and ask questions if I don't know. And I think that people appreciate that because they want to make sure that you're invested and on the same page too. And at the risk of like sounding clueless, I think you're going to gain more in the end from making sure that you're connecting with them rather than sort of just feeling intimidated by this kind of advertising language. I mean, I guess that's what it is, but I'm like, where are these words coming from? Where did you get them?
What are y'all talking about?
Right.
I don't know.
I mean, I'm like, this isn't how people talk to each other about the way things look.
Like even when I showed you the mood board from that project, I remember you using language about like which of the colors were the primary ones. And then there were some that I probably would have said like accent
colors. Yeah. Right.
And I was like, oh, she's also using some words that like, okay.
Now the words are ingrained in my mind. And like suddenly I'm the advertising person. Like I'm like, I know I say this stuff now. It just comes out of my mouth.
But even working with you on that helped me to know for like the next project I would do, you know, that was going to involve working with an ad agency or creative agency. I felt like more equipped.
Right.
After like having that conversation with you, I was like, okay, I'm talking to someone I'm familiar with. So I'm not like in the meeting where you're supposed to appear like, you know, all the things. Right. I could look at you and be like, what is this?
What are we saying? Yeah. And it's nice too when you're working with another person, like Forrest and I working together on something, we're able to get off the phone and be like, okay, so what I took from that is, and it's nice to have somebody to like bounce that off of, because I honestly don't know how people like put together creative decks and bid by themselves.
Right.
Like it being in just like a bubble of your own mind and like creativity, I'm like, that seems stressful to be like, I know what direction. Because the other thing is when people present you with this stuff, then you're supposed to process that and basically pick a direction and really commit to it and go for it and like show them the way you think the project should look in finality. So you have to have you have to be really self-assured about that.
Right.
And be like, I'm picking the right thing. I feel good about this and I'm sticking with it till the end now.
Mm-hmm.
So having another person as a partner on that kind of thing, I think really gives you the support that you need to feel good about it.
Yeah, you have someone else to kind of bounce that off of, to kind of create that sharpening almost, and not to feel so crazy. Because when I've had projects where I was just alone, it was like I was there by myself creating the things, and then I have to pitch that or talk to the client or whoever about it. I was just, you know.
And there's a moment when you can just look over and be like, this is a good idea, right?
Right.
Like, I just before I show this to like a room of people, I want to clarify that we think this looks good and makes sense.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know how people do it without that.
Mm-mm. I don't. If you can have a person, even if it's not your business
partner, call your
person, just another person to be like, let me just let you see this and make sure I'm not crazy. I want to ask you along those lines. How do you deal with, I'm going to use the word rejection because there may be a better word to describe this, but in the sense of in your business, you're pitching ideas, you're pitching your work or your ability to do this work, but it may be you pitching alongside however many other people are up for the job, you know? And so some of those, you end up being the company that gets picked, you know? And then some of those, you were hoping you were going to get picked and you don't. How do you balance not feeling like, I give up on all of this?
Yeah, that's a hard question. I think it's because, especially for big advertising jobs, you're always bidding against two other people. So they're like triple bids. So when they bring you this huge job and big budget, before you get all excited about it, you always have to know that there's usually two other people that they are giving the same amount of attention, who are also putting together pitches, who are on the phone with them, who are getting debriefed all about it, like, because it gets really involved and it makes you feel like you're like, surely I'm going to get this job. But I would say, I mean, at this point, Tropico's been around for a little more than a couple of years. And we have been so lucky to be really successful during that time and to be able to live off of our business and fully commit to it, which is amazing. But I would say that, you know, when we get approached for these big ad jobs, we probably only get like 25% of them.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many times when we get contacted and you make it to whatever point within the process. And sometimes it's like weeks in and then you just don't hear anything back and you didn't get it. And I think that you have to, at this point, I feel relatively unattached until the contract is signed, until the deposit is paid.
A word today, Michelle. A word about the deposit today.
I mean, the deposit. Mm-hmm. I mean, we started, I feel like I sleep so much better at night ever since like a year, maybe it was a year ago, maybe a little longer, that we started saying we have to get a 50% deposit before we can lift a finger for the project. Like, I can't be doing anything to prep for it without a deposit. And it's amazing because it helps like make your income steadier, because obviously as freelance, you're, you know, maybe doing all these jobs, but you're not going to get paid for any of them for 30 to 90 days sometimes. Mm-hmm. Well, so it helps stabilize because you're getting paid twice as often, essentially, like maybe not the full amount, but still it helps you pay your bills like a normal person. And then on top of that, it ensures that you're not going to get screwed over, because otherwise there's nothing between them. Like, once you started using time on prepping for a project, I mean, those are like billable hours. And then if the project falls through, there, you don't really have any recourse. So we do a non-refundable 50% deposit. And then if the project falls through on their end, you know, people just eat that money because that's, you know, what was agreed to. But back to kind of rejection is like, you have to think of it not as a rejection, just like a missed opportunity, because we're like, there's so many times when it's not going to come through. Mm. I mean, I think even the most, and I mean, this is hypothetical, but in general, I think even the most successful photographers are probably talking like a 50% success rate on these types of jobs, because the other two people you're bidding against are also amazing photographers. And you end up knowing that like something else is going to come around. And for us, it always has. Like, even if we only are getting a few huge jobs a year, that's still really fortunate and amazing. And those pay great. And then in between, we have so many other projects to be working on, and like exciting personal projects and smaller clients and chances to try new things. And so you just have to know that you're putting your best foot forward and you're being proactive, and like, you are going to get really great jobs and you might not get all of them, but you can't be thinking about every single project you've ever been asked about. And at this point, honestly, I completely forget about most of the projects that fall through. Like, we're so busy talking to other people already, putting together decks, planning for shoots, that, you know, it's out of sight, out of mind after it falls through, because you start to have enough leads where you're busy anyway. So honestly, do you want every single job? Probably not. You would lose your mind.
Tired. Yeah. So tired.
Yeah. And then you end up being happy for some of the downtime that happens naturally, because we're able to travel, we're able to work on new personal work, projects that we just want to do for art, on even thinking about how we want to progress our business in the future and being able to, like, we just recently worked with a local designer to make a really cool mailer that's like sort of like a little art zine. And that was something we really couldn't have done if we hadn't had the downtime for it. And then, you know, we're going to be able to send that on to people that we're excited about working with and to agencies and reps and people like that. And you really can't spend the time to do those things if you don't have some downtime. So I think you just have to think of it as, you know, things come and go, opportunities show up and then disappear out of nowhere. And you can't get too invested in anything until it's a done deal.
Oof, you just spoke a word. It's like a couple of words that were in there. I mean, the first thing is just turning on its head how we view rejection as people who are, you know, creating or putting art in the world in some way. I think we can get super emotionally attached to the things that we make or put our personal value or worth into what people say or think or accept or reject about what we make. And I love that you use that phrase, missed opportunity, which is a lot lighter. And I feel like I'm a lot more likely to be able to move on in my life from that versus right. Like rejection sounds like sackcloth and ashes and salt over my shoulders. And now I'm just like, how will I ever make a thing again?
Right.
You know,
I mean, the other thing is I feel like I have sometimes gotten caught up with other people, like other creatives looking at what they're doing and being like feeling really jealous and being like, oh man, they got get all these amazing jobs. And I just feel like, what are we doing that we're not? And then I think about the fact that like we are getting really great jobs. It's just easy to like kind of look on to other people and compare. And then I also then am forced to step back and think for a minute about how like we are doing the job of our dreams, living the life of our dreams, making a good living and never have to dread going to or doing work ever. Like, what am I talking about? What am I complaining about? It's crazy.
Yeah.
And it makes you realize that like this comparison thing will just eat you alive no matter what. And to me, that's almost even more dangerous than just the frustration of being rejected, is looking on at what other people are doing and thinking about how like, oh, well, you know, I'm never going to be getting those types of jobs. I'm never this. And it's like, be thankful for what you have. And I mean, it sounds so simple, but it really is like being a working creative is such a joy, and also never having to dread doing your job.
Yeah.
It's like every day. And when people tell me that they are like dreading going back to work or something like that, it makes me remember how lucky we are, because there's not a thing in my life that I wish I didn't have to do.
Wow. That's amazing.
I mean, I guess if I got jury duty,
right? And you're like, oh, well.
Well, not that.
Then you're like, maybe I'll do some sketches.
Yeah. Maybe I'll make this a fun thing. Maybe get some work done.
I love that perspective, though, just to look at it. First of all, what you said about the comparison factor, I think is so true, because everything about being a creative who's also an entrepreneur is this constant ebb and flow, that sometimes in your business, you'll be in the middle of like this super busy time, all the stuff's going on. And then you will naturally, like you said, have some time that like, it's just going to slow down.
Right.
And inevitably, sometimes during that slowdown time is when you're like, scrolls Instagram and like, oh, look,
oh,
at
wow,
you.
Amazing new campaign for you.
Oh, you're working with that. That's nice. And I'm at my house now.
I'm in my pajamas right now. That's fun.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, yeah, I think also for freelance, you really just can't get too emotionally tied to like how much work you're currently doing. Because there have literally been times when I've been like, if no one ever emails us for a job again, I couldn't be happier, because we're so busy and I just can't anymore. And then literally it'd be 2 weeks later and we're like completely dead. And I'm like refreshing my email and being like, anyone need anything?
Hello?
Or
Hello? And
so like, you can't, the more you get tied to that, you're never going to be happy. Cause when you're busy, you're tired. And then when you're not busy, instead of enjoying your downtime, you're just thinking about how you hope you get a job. Well, it's like, that's not how you want to live.
Yeah.
So you have to be like, okay, I know I'm going to get jobs and I'm going to be good with my money when I get them, so that when I don't have jobs, I can just enjoy myself and go rollerblade on the Beltline with my dog.
A word.
Isn't that what you want to be doing?
Yes. I mean, different, because you know I don't do outside.
And you're like, not that.
Or but dogs, but same. That, but me and a donut, probably. I'm taking a donut down the belt line.
Exactly.
Just with my sneakers on. But that's something I'm still learning in a lot of ways. It's the thing I have to remember when the slow time comes. There's always this moment of like, you know, like starts to freak out and then just has to be like, okay, like last summer was slow like that for our business. And I just decided, you know what? I'm going to work a 4-day work week because we'd had a really crazy year prior, you know, personally and professionally. And I was like, you know what? This is a summer that I don't have a lot on my plate. I'm going to work 4 days a week and like write the stuff that I've been wanting to write. And in what other job that I would be working or worked in the past would I have been able to go, hey, you guys, this whole summer, I'm only going to be here 4 days a week. Don't ask for me.
Sorry.
Don't ask for me. Don't worry about where I'm at. I'm not available on those days. Yeah. And I think the other thing you said too about the comparison factor is sometimes when we're looking at like other creatives getting whatever that opportunity is, like we know our own life. So we know like the hard work we put in and the struggles we go through. And like, we know all those things. So when great opportunities come to us, we're like, I needed that opportunity. I'm so glad, you know, but when we're looking at someone else's life from afar, we're not able to see like all of the things back there that like helped that person.
And I mean, you're seeing it on social media where people are literally, it's just the highlights. It's just the big campaign that you worked on. It's just the magazine cover. I mean, I'm sure that there are people who look at our Instagram feed and are like, man, they're just always busy making something cool, I guess, and blah, blah, blah. I think one thing, though, is it's nice when I follow creatives on Instagram who are like transparent about the fact that everybody has slow times. And I guess I'm always assuming that people are just constantly jet setting and shooting and getting a new campaign and this and that and the other. But that's not necessarily true. And I think that it needs to be acknowledged that like being slow doesn't mean that your business is dying. It just, there are seasons for everything. And sometimes it just happens that less people are contacting you right then. But there's nothing wrong with that. And you have to learn that being freelance doesn't mean that you're trying to work a 9-to-5. So if you don't have enough work to be working 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, that doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's like having enough work to make enough money to live on and to live the type of life that you want. But if, you know, if that took you 8 days last month, good for you. You don't need to be like sitting at your desk waiting every weekday for an email so that you'll have something to do. It's like, go do something else. You don't have a 9-to-5.
I am going to rewind this and listen to it myself whenever I'm starting to freak out. I'm going to be like, Michelle, tell me again because I need
Well, it's just because I've had moments like that where I was, you know, starting the day at 9 and then like did all the things and was done at 1:30 and would be like, oh, I just feel so lazy to go just take a walk now and whatever. And it's like, why? This is the whole point of why you do this. And then there are times when we're literally working until midnight.
Right.
And why am I forgetting about these times now? Because I want to take a walk in the middle of the day.
Because I'm holding myself to some like paradigm that I don't even have to exist on. I was just thinking about this weekend because, as you know, I'm married to a DJ. So in our business, it's like the weekend is a work time.
Yeah.
So if he's DJing Friday and Saturday night, I may have an event to do or host during that time. So in a way, it's like Monday becomes our Saturday. Monday is the day that you're like going to the grocery store and cooking food for the week or whatever you're going to do. And so I had to stop holding myself even to the weekend, like the traditional weekend. Like I might not get that, you know, starts at Friday night until like Monday morning thing, you know?
And it's a completely made up construct. And the whole idea is that you're living outside of the normal work schedule. So why this guilt and obsession with like adhering to it at the same time? I feel like it took me a little while to realize that I was like, I need to be working 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And then I was like, honestly, so many people that I know who go to their jobs are sitting on Facebook for like half of that time. So I'm like, I don't even know that you need 8 hours.
I know I did. Well, I don't know if we had Facebook when I worked corporate because it was a while ago.
Right.
But I know I did all sorts of things that were not my job.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm like, you know what? If you can get all of your work done in whatever length of time, more power to you. It's not about like filling the time with you sitting at the computer. So, I mean, and you know, of course, we work on weekends. I'm surrounded right now by like props that I'm like painting and cutting out. So it just depends. And then sometimes you'll have some of the week off and sometimes you get a whole weekend off and some of the week off. And then sometimes you work 18 hours a day. for, you know, 2 weeks.
Right. Until the project gets done. Yeah. Can you speak to the importance of creating work, not just for clients? Because one of the things that you had talked about before that I'd love for you to speak to more is with the work that you're doing with Tropico and your business, you and Forest, obviously, you know, you have part of your creativity is going towards this is a thing the client is wanting or needs. How do we come around that with like unique ideas or ideas that, you know, come from us, you know, that we're trying to come up with these ideas that we know are unique to us, right? But then also, I think sometimes we can forget to go back and just make stuff because it's fun. So talk about that part. Is that a part of your process as well? Like, do the two of you have times that you're like, you know what, we're going to make some stuff that's not for anybody or anything, just because we want to, because it's fun.
Right. Yeah. I think that in the beginning, we did that all the time. That's like really how we built our portfolio, was just thinking of like fun things that we'd like to shoot. Once we started getting really busy with client work, I felt like it did fall by the wayside at different points. You know, like we were intermittently making things. And one of our biggest times has been when we'll like take a long trip. We do a lot of shooting, which is a great way to make work that's just for us. But we had the realization earlier this year that we hadn't done a portfolio project in, I don't know, I mean, maybe almost a year at that point. So we actually did one in, I guess it was in February. It feels like forever ago. Like, when is it now? It's April?
Okay. Right. Because I was like, it's July.
It feels like the summer. It's August. Okay. So we did a portfolio project in February called Big Sun, and it's not out yet, but we're like so excited about it. It was such a huge undertaking because it's one of those things that I was talking about earlier where you commit to an idea and then you're like, I am now committed to it and I have to go with it full force, because I had been very inspired by these like David Hockney pool paintings. And I was like, I want to paint a huge psych wall with a painting that I paint, and then we're going to paint it huge. And then these girls are going to be on it. And so we had these three beautiful women of color together, like wearing a local designer. And we had so many people that helped us out with it, and like help style and paint and props and so many different parts that go into a production. But it ended up just being a massive undertaking. I'm not a muralist. So I, first time ever being like, I'm going to translate. I'm not a painter either. So of course I like do this design. And then literally a few days before we start like the painting, I'm talking to Forrest and I'm like, is this so stupid?
just let me get some confirmation on this decision that I'm making
like,
right here.
Before we like spend all this money on this portfolio project, because the other thing is right now the kind of portfolio work that's important to us is like not only stuff that excites us, but that is also going to show a new aspect of what we can do. So for this, we were like, we really want to be shooting more people. We want it to lean a little bit more fashion, but also art, like stuff that we don't dabble in as much with our work currently. And this was exactly that. But I was like, I've never seen someone do something like this. So this like weird painted surrealist like world the girls are in that is actually like representational, because it had like a pool and like buildings and stuff. Like it was, you could tell what was going on. We had like a diving board that's like made out of a plank of wood.
Wow.
That's like into the fake pool. Like it's so much happening. And I was very worried it was going to be like the dumbest thing in the whole world, like 2 days before when we've already done all this work. But it turned out so amazing. It is my favorite project we've ever done. And I can't wait to show people. But that's kind of the leap that you have to take of saying, I have an idea, I'm going to stick with it now. And I'm just going to trust that it's going to be cool. And it ended up really turning out that way. But I think another stress on top was that when you start getting into a production that big, you really are spending a lot of money to make it. Like it's not free. Mm-hmm. And even though a lot of people are like willingly volunteering their time, there's just concrete cost, like this much paint and, you know, shoes that we like can't return. They're going to get like scuffed. Like just the cost of props, like things add up a crazy amount, even when so many people are helping you out. And, it's something that you need to account for and be willing to do, because it's completely worthwhile, but you have to commit even more because you're saying like, it's not going to be the kind of thing where if it turns out bad, it was no big deal. Like if it turns out bad, it was $3,000.
And I won't
all those dollars.
Right. And you're like $3,000 to look really bad, I guess. But it was amazing. And I'm excited for it. And I think that it kind of got me excited again about just making work for us and just showing what we can do and feeling super passionate about a project and a direction and not having anybody to report to about it.
Yeah. I mean, I just had another creative give me a talk that like I want to say it was a pep talk, but I mean, kind of like foot in your a little bit. That's like a pep talk.
Right.
But, you know, she was giving me this talk, like as a creative, you should be willing to invest in yourself, you know, invest in the direction you want to see your career go.
Right.
Because I was kind of standing at that, you know, fork in the road of like, well, I could kind of put this money, you know, into this thing I want to make. And I'm a little scared thinking about putting that money into it and just hearing you share this story of this project that you were working on. It encourages me also along the lines of what she was trying to say, like as a creative, don't be afraid to put that investment into yourself, into your business, you know?
And I think it's a little counterintuitive because a lot of creatives work from the point, and I mean, we do too in general, is to like spend as little as you can and try to make as much as you can without putting too much into a project. Like, money-wise, like how to be, keep it really affordable. But then there's times when you just have to make the leap and be like, I want this to be the best it can be. And there is money that needs to go back into the business. And that's how it works. And you realize that creatives are kind of the only ones who don't think of it that way. Like everybody else is like, you have to spend money on your business to make money. Like that's how business works. But I think creatives kind of skirt that a little bit and are like, oh no, I just pay for materials, but then I try to keep it pretty low key. So it's funny though, because you never know the way that things are going to come back. Like after doing this project, it was so serendipitous. Like the project obviously isn't even out yet. And we had been posting like behind the scenes on like Instagram. Well, the creative directors that we know follow us from Atlanta Magazine saw the behind the scenes and then reached out like literally less than a week later. And we're like, we want you guys to do something like this for the cover.
Wow.
Of next month's issue. So we shot that and it literally was like an exact, like, it's rare when you make things that you see it come back to you so instantly and clearly and know where it came from. But this was one of those things where it was like, you did a portfolio project, immediately got a job from said project that directly relates to it.
Wow.
And I was like, man, you never know. You really don't. And we like shot it at the same studio. We did a big painting for it. Like it was really correlated to the project, which is awesome. And it's kind of a like oversimplified version of what portfolio work does for you. But it also is a good representation for like, this is the idea. You make something for yourself that you're just excited about. And then even if this wasn't your intention, clients see that, they like it, and then they're going to come to you for that sort of work.
Yeah.
And if they can't see that in your portfolio, then they're never going to think of you for it.
A word today, Michelle. A word today. Oh, that's so inspiring. It's really inspiring me just to think about that. And as I think finally I go through like different stages where like I'm writing and then I'm taking the writing for stage and, you know, so now it's like I'm back at the beginning of that cycle, which is getting ready to go into the writing, which, you know, I want to procrastinate and not do because, you know.
Because that's how getting started on any project is like that.
Like no.
Even if you like what you do, you're like, getting started is so hard.
I'm like, no, are there dishes I can?
I know, literally anything. House will be sparkling clean.
What else could I do
before a project?
Sit down and do this. Yeah. But it's so interesting how sitting down to do that work in this nurturing way for yourself as a creative and for your business, to me, does bring this good energy to you. And sometimes it brings clients to you, like in the story, you know, you just told.
I really don't think there's any time when you like exert creative energy where it's for nothing. Like in some way or another, that ends up serving you. And whether it's as obvious as it was in this case, or whether it's something more subtle, or even like years later, I think that those things come back and they're a big deal. And there's not a time when you're like, man, I wish I hadn't spent that time on that creative project. It's like, I don't think you should ever feel like that, you know?
Yeah. What tips would you give to people who are just starting in photography? They're maybe at the very beginning, getting out of school if they've decided to go to school for photography, or they're in the hobby phase, but contemplating if that hobby should turn into more of a side hustle, right, more of a business. What are some things you would say, like just the things you've learned as a photographer, the things you've learned in your business that would be good for that photographer kind of on the edge of maybe jumping more into this? What should they be thinking about?
I think the biggest point and the thing I tell people most often is actually what I brought up earlier about branding yourself, because there's going to be a million people who can like do headshots, who can shoot weddings. And even if those are the things you want to do, amazing. But figure out what it is that you can bring to that that makes you special, because you don't want to be competing for having like the lowest rate. And if you don't have something special that you bring to it that people want you for and know that only you can deliver, then you always will be kind of competing to be cheaper than other people, mm-hmm, which is the last thing that you want. And I think like whenever you brand yourself, it makes you more able to say like, this is why I can do this job in a way that's really special and amazing, instead of having to come for it from the direction of saying like, here's how much money I can save you. Like it's simultaneously not good for a business and also not really good for the way that you think about what you bring to a project. Mm-hmm. So I think branding yourself and figuring out what you can bring to the table that's special and that's consistent and that's going to make you desirable specifically is ultimately the most important part. Outside of that, I think that you really have to get your, you know, business stuff together, like figure out the things we were talking about, like how you're going to charge for things, what questions you're going to ask clients when they talk to you, the kind of language that you use when you're talking to clients. You want to sound competent and friendly, but you also want to be firm about things like your rate and about how things need to be done. Especially because it just garners you respect over time, so people don't try to walk all over you. Because as a creative, I think there's going to be a lot of times when people think they can demand things from you that they wouldn't from like somebody else. Like if someone, I'm trying to think of a good example for this of like a really practical job. Like if a lawyer tells you it's going to take them a certain amount of time to put together some paperwork, you're probably not going to be like, oh, well, could you do it in a couple days instead?
Right.
Like, well, you're like, no, they just told you how they do it. And I think that with creative jobs, there's a lot of times when people just think that we're maybe like making stuff up. Like, mm-hmm, like when you're like, well, our turnaround is 14 business days. People feel like they're like, that sounds really long. Could it be shorter? And you're like, no. What? And
do you want it to be whack?
Right. If you would like the final product to be whack, then sure.
Certainly. Tomorrow we could give you something whack. Instantly.
But yeah, it becomes this thing where, you know, like, and I don't think people are intending to push people around, but I think it's just the way that things, that creative jobs are perceived. Like when people just ask you if you can like come down on your rate, if you can do things for free, like just stuff they wouldn't ask other people who have professions that are more clearly outlined maybe. And I think finding your footing with that and feeling really confident about what you're going to say is important. And the other thing is, just on a completely practical level, you're going to be able to do this stuff a lot better if you're not feeling like panicked for money.
Yeah.
So I would say,
that's a good point.
Because everyone's always like, go out and be firm and blah, blah. But you're like, if you like need the cash and this job is going to go away if you can't do it for like half, then you're going to do the job. So I think the idea is really that you want to get financially sound going into it. So like, even if you want to take it up as your side hustle and save up, a lot of people say that the standard is that you should have 3 months of living saved up, like, mm-hmm, for everything, mm-hmm, so that if you don't get a job for 2 months, you're not going to be like panicked. And that's going to let you like be more selective about the kind of work that you want to get. It's going to let you be more selective about the kind of clients that you want to choose, about what you put out there. And I think that there's a lot of flailing that happens when people first go freelance that maybe makes you make decisions that aren't going to look great for your business in the long term. And you're going to be able to think a lot more long term if you feel like you're not hard up for cash from the get-go.
Yeah.
Which I feel like not enough people say. People are just like, go pursue your dream. And you're like, with money.
Right. Because otherwise I'm going to be crying and right, not have a place to live.
Or you're going to get burnt out really fast where, mm-hmm, you like go into freelance, try it for 2 months. It's traumatizing because you thought you were going to get kicked out of your apartment. And then you're like, I can't do freelance. And you're like, well, that wasn't really a fair shot maybe. Because at this point, freelance feels just like a real job,
yeah,
to me. I mean, which is amazing to be like, get jobs actively enough and get paid enough that you're like, you get a salary basically. Mm-hmm. So if you start from the right place, I think you're going to be in better footing to pursue your long-term goals versus just having to take every single job now.
Michelle is telling y'all the business because when I have creatives come up to me and ask me for advice on this, and they're like, I'm working this job I hate so much, and I really want to be, you know, fill in the blank with whatever creative thing they love. And typically one of the first things I say is, I'm like, I'm about to tell you something that's not sexy. Yeah. And it's not going to feel like, yeah, I'm doing my dream, but yep. Like, maybe don't quit yet until you like save up this money.
Yep.
And then do your thing you've been doing on the side, and like, don't like act like that money doesn't exist. The right. money that you make from that, and like stack money and stack money and stack money.
Right.
Until when you do decide to leave your job, you're making a transition
right.
versus you doing what I did, which was, I hate this corporate job.
Right.
Quit. And then I'm like, hey, world, I'm available for gigs.
Right.
And the world's like,
bring it to me now.
World's like, can't hear you. Sorry. Don't know who you are yet. And I'm like, what? No one knows who I am. I'm here in my apartment.
No, come on.
I'm available. Hello? Hello?
No, I had to learn that totally the hard way.
I mean, I think that is kind of part of it, though, because we, you know, Forrest and I each did assisting, and he was a photography assistant. I was a stylist assistant for a while. And then I decided I didn't like styling, like by itself.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is not what I want to do. I like hit this point, I guess it was, you know, a little over a couple years ago, right before Christmas, I was like, I am not taking a single other assisting job in the new year. And I was like, I'm only doing photography. I'm going to put my energy 100% into Tropica Photo, and we are going to live off of this. I cannot say for a fact that I had 3 months saved up then. I think I probably almost definitely did not. But I feel like we were really fortunate that we like put that out into the world. We like spent all this time working on the website, getting our great logo together, starting our Instagram. And, you know, like we started to get jobs. It was just like, it happened, put it out into the world. And that doesn't mean that that can't happen for whoever's doing it. I think it's probably a lot less traumatizing if you have money involved already.
Sure.
But another thing that actually brings up is that don't like half ass anything going in. Like treat it like you're like a real, real business.
Yeah.
Like get a great website. Like don't start with some janky website. Like make it nice from the get. Like get a great logo.
Mm-hmm.
Like pay a graphic designer to make
a
logo for you.
Pay a graphic designer, yeah. People. I'm serious.
That is very real. Pay them to make your cards. Like just stuff that's like a lot of people kind of start DIY and mm-hmm. you know, it's just going to make you look unprofessional because I think that was one thing we had going for us was what we were presenting from the get-go was like what we still have now as far as like website, as far as our logo, as the curation of our Instagram, just making sure that it looks all the way there. Don't kind of like start and then like post a picture of your cat or something. Like do it all the way when you do it.
Yes.
Like, and
like
so,
you're forecasting in a way.
Exactly.
Like you're
so
forecasting
imagine if you're already
want.
A famous working photographer. That's what it needs to look like
yeah.
now.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that gets you so much further than when people kind of like tiptoe into stuff and they're like, oh, here's a picture. Don't be posting your behind the scenes like stuff on your feed. Like just things that's like, think about what you think looks really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Don't come at it from the point of like, well, I'm not like a professional photographer yet. And you're like, if that's what you want, that's what you want it to look like. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So I feel like all of those things hopefully help you get going.
Michelle just gave y'all the business in here. I hope y'all was taking notes. I'm gonna listen back and take notes too, even though I don't take a picture because I have no visual gifts of any kind.
Gosh.
So I always have to seek a professional on that. I'm like, someone please help me look nice.
Right.
Please take this picture. I don't know where the lighting is. I just don't know anything.
I mean, that's kind of the thing for anything though. Like whatever creative field you're going to is like pay the people that do the stuff you don't do. Like, don't try to, like, I mean, we're always working with, like, graphic designers and, I mean, graphic designers are really the main people, actually, because we're, like, even for videos, like, the last project, the Big Sun project, we did a video and, like, you know, you gotta pay your graphic designer friend yeah. to do the lettering for, you know, the title page and for the end and like just stuff that you're like, you need everything to look really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And to represent where you are headed.
Exactly.
Like where you see yourself going. I think that's such a powerful point.
That's the perfect way to say it, is that you're going to go ahead and put forward where you want to be and don't make it look like you're kind of unsure right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so good, Michelle. I hope you were able to capture all the gems from this conversation with Michelle Norris, especially for those of you that work in creative fields. But no worries if you didn't, because that's what the show notes are for. Check out aminabrown.com/her with Amina for the show notes from this or any Her with Amina episodes. You can find out more about Michelle and Tropico Photo at tropicophoto.com. And you can follow on Instagram at Tropico Photo. For this week's edition of Give Her a Crown, I'd like to shout out photographer Camille Seaman. Camille was born in 1969 to a Native American Shinnecock tribe father and an African American mother. Her photographs have been published in National Geographic Magazine, Time Magazine, Newsweek, among many others. Camille Seaman strongly believes in capturing photographs that articulate that humans are not separate from nature. In a BuzzFeed article, Camille said, "As a child, I knew I was different from the other children at school, but I could not articulate what that difference was. I was troubled when the textbooks we read spoke about natives in the past tense, always implying that we no longer existed. We are still here. When you see these portraits, you may find we no longer look like you think we ought to, but that doesn't mean we are not here. It's time for a new record of Native America." Photographer Camille Seaman, give her a crown. Her with Amina Brown is produced by Matt Owen for Soul Graffiti Productions as a part of the Seneca Women Podcast Network in partnership with iHeartRadio. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.